anxiety. It's easy to make jokes about it, but for some of us, I think many of us, it can be a kind of a plague on our life, really. And I've thought lots about anxiety. There's, you know, different members of our family kind of suffer from it. I do a bit, I guess, not as much as some people struggle with it. Anxiety is always based around the future. It's always future related. If you're sick or you're suffering now, that's suffering. Anxiety is about the future. Now, here's a definition from the Oxford Dictionary. It's a good definition. Anxiety is a feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease about something with an uncertain outcome. It's about the future and something that you can't control. Now, we'll come back to that. I want to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 9, and we'll just different angle on why it is that people feel anxious. But let me take you through. I'd like to show you, before we get to Ecclesiastes chapter 9, I want to show you three stories, three items. Anyway, three different things. Here we go. A friend of mine is a lawyer. He's, how would I describe it, a public atheist. He's actually quite high up in the Skeptics Society of Australia. And we have lunch together regularly. A lawyer in the city. It's interesting having lunch together as we debate different things. We've been swapping emails about what it is that makes people successful in life and how much of success in life is actually due to chance. So here's what he sent to me this week, actually just on Tuesday, I think it was. He said this: I think this is a more realistic breakdown of how people's lives pan out. So 30% of success or whatever is your genes, 30% quality of parenting and education, mixed depending on the circumstances of the kid, e.g. different for a kid in boarding school, 30% motivation and, if you're not familiar with the term, hard yakka, just means hard work, and 10% luck. So he's saying, yeah, you know, 10% of life, and luck is something that happens to you that you have no control over, or something from your past that was just a random thing you couldn't control. 10% luck? What do you think? Okay, next one. There's a man I've got to know called Peter, another lawyer who works in the city. He's a couple of years older than me. And we're having lunch together one day, and he's just telling me about when he finished high school. It's 1975. Long time ago, 1975, and he's wondering what to do with his life. And he's a drummer. In fact, he still is. He still plays cover bands in pubs. He's pretty good for an old guy. And he said he finished the HSC looking for a job. There was an ad in the local newspaper in Newtown as a rock and roll band nobody had ever really heard of, wanted a drummer. So he went and auditioned, and they rang him after that and said, mate, you've got the gig. We're about to go on the road. We're going to travel, do gigs all over the place. You've got the gig. The next day, the university admissions came out and he got into law at the University of New South Wales. So he said, oh, I'm talking to my dad on the phone, and my dad said, mate, the rock and roll thing, it's a bit of a pipe dream. It's never going to really make much money. You go and do law. That's much more secure. So he rang the band back and said, thanks, but no thanks. I won't take it. And he went off to law school. Next story. This couple are Rod and Mary Burrows from Queensland, and they're lucky enough to be heading off on overseas holiday. Mrs. Burrows has been a civilian employee of the Queensland Police Service for 16 years, and she said, Rod is very excited about going. It's not our first overseas trip, but it's been planned for a long time. Rod and Mary Burrows. Okay, there's the three. So you've got how much of life is just luck, my friend who said no to the band, and Rod and Mary who are travelling overseas. All right, what we're going to do tonight is we're going to look at two very different worldviews. And a worldview, obviously, how you see the world, a worldview becomes like glasses if you wear them. That is, when you've worn glasses for a while, you forget that they're there. But it really affects the whole way that you see the world. And the first worldview comes out of the book of Ecclesiastes, and it's about seeing life under the sun. That's the phrase that he uses. Ecclesiastes is 12 short chapters, 29 times he uses this little phrase. What's he mean? Well, Ecclesiastes is different to the other 65 books of the Bible. The author's pushing you to say, if all we had is what we see in the world, if God, he's not an atheist, it's not as if there's no God, but if God hadn't spoken to us, God's there, but the ways of God are kind of inscrutable, God's not really personally involved, If all we had, though, is what we see, how would we make sense of the world and how would that affect us? If we lived under the sun, how would that affect us? And you can see, if you're following on your program on the Bible, he talks about being under the sun, verse 3, verse 6, verse 9, verse 11. Again and again, he's saying, if it was just under the sun. So let's have a look. Over the last 4 weeks before this, he's worked through looking for something that really lasts. He's worked through, well, okay, nature seems to go on forever and we're only here for 5 minutes. Wisdom doesn't seem to last. Pleasure might be fun, but it doesn't last. Money and possessions can be good, but they don't really last. What is it you can build your life on? Well, here's some of the conclusions of this under-the-sun worldview. See 9 verse 1. So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no one knows whether love or hate awaits them. Like, if all we had was what we see, who knows? What, you die and then what? Who knows, he's saying. What you can see for sure in this world, verse 2, all share a common destiny, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good, so with the sinful. As it is with those who take oaths, so with those who are afraid to take them. And what's he talking about? Well, death. Now, isn't it interesting how, you know, in polite society, or, you know, polite dinner parties or whatever, you're not supposed to talk about death. And yet, the mortality rate hovers around 100%. I can assure you of that. I did the stats. Nearly two people die each second. Right? Actually, it's 1.8 people die per second. Let's do the mathematics. That's 105 people die each minute. So there's about 300 people died around the world in the since I started this little talk. 6,300 people die each hour. 151,600 people die each day, and around 55 million people die each year. As my mate George says with a big smile when he talks to me, no one's getting out alive. No, thanks, George, that's good. And it's even worse than that. See verse 3. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. You see what he's saying? The good, the bad, the righteous, the wicked, the religious, the non-religious, everyone dies. And what's the difference? Apparently, under the sun, no difference. And so what happens? See verse 3. The hearts of people, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live, and afterward they join the dead. If you want to see people's hearts full of evil, just pick up a newspaper or go to a news website. What's it full of? It's full of greed and envy and violence and people damaging one another. And this was written 3,000 years ago and nothing's changed. And madness, and I saw this week, no, it was last week, the example of madness. 18th of May, police are called to deal with an incident, high-level abuse, violent conduct, assaults, threatening behaviour, racial and cultural abuse. And where is this that the poor old police are called to? A soccer game. Only it's the under-sevens soccer game, and that's the parents. Now, if you want to see madness, you go and watch a kid's soccer game and watch the parents. Police were called to a blow-up. This is in the Telegraph, May 27. Police were called to a blow-up between parents in an under-seven soccer game in the St. George area. High-level abuse of match officials, violent conduct, assaults between players, parents and spectators, threatening behaviour, racial and cultural abuse have occurred, etc., etc. Madness. Madness. Verse 4. Anyone who is among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. In the ancient world, dogs weren't loved and cuddled and pampered the way they are in our culture. Dogs were despised. They were dirty scavengers or whatever. So you've got the dirty scavenger and the king of beasts. Well, once the king of beasts is dead, better off to be a dirty scavenger, is what he's saying. Verse 5, for the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even their name is forgotten. Their love, their hate, their jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. And you see verse 6, love and hate and jealousy, it's not that they're good, it's just that they're the hot emotions. And he's saying that, yeah, well, no, they're all just, they're gone. They disappear. You ever heard the full poem of that's said in the RSL club every night at 9 o'clock? You know, they went with songs to the battle. They were young, straight of limb, true of eye, steady and aglow. They fell with their faces to it. Yeah, and we will remember them. No, we won't. St. Michael's honour roll, the Great War. You look at how many of them. Well, actually, I don't have to say how many of them died. They're all dead. And we don't know who they were. We don't remember them. That's what he's saying. They'll all be, verse 5, they'll all be forgotten. Okay, so how do you respond? Under the sun, how do you respond? Well, the best you can do, verse 7, go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for God has already approved what you do. What I think he means is, on the way through in Ecclesiastes, he's been saying, if you're able to enjoy life, if you can enjoy your work, food, wine, company, God's given you that ability. There's lots of people who have money and possessions and food and can't enjoy them. If you can enjoy it, it's a gift of God. And then verse 8, always be clothed in white and anoint your head with oil. So, hey, folks, wear white, have a shiny head. That's what he's saying. If you want to enjoy life. All right. Verse 9, enjoy life with your wife whom you love all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. Now, if you've been coming along week by week, well done. The meaningless word there is translating the Hebrew word hebel, which means a mist or a vapor. He's not saying that things in the earth, in the world, are bad. They just don't last. That's the particular point. For this is your lot in life and your toilsome labor under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the realm of the dead, where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. I remember very well, I was working for a company, Berger Paints. I do marketing work with them. I've been a graduate for 3 years, something like that. And it was ironic. It was the day they'd given me my own office and the corporate American Express card. I remember holding it. Oh. Anyway, it was the day I decided. I walked into my boss's office. And I said to Brian, my boss, Brian, I want to give notice. I'm going to give 5 weeks' notice. I'm resigning to go and do Christian ministry work, apprenticeship at the Uni of New South Wales. And he looked at me and he said nothing. I reckon it was for 30 seconds. We stared at each other. It's a long time. And he said, well, when you're dead for a long time. So you better do what you've got to do. And he walked out. That was all he said. I remember it. And it's right. He wasn't a Christian. He wasn't a believer. But it's exactly what verse 10 says, isn't it? But the thing is, yeah, let's enjoy ourselves. But there's something else that's troubling under the sun. Do you see the next thing he says? This is troubling once you really think about it. Verse 11, I have seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift or battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favour to the learned. But notice those two words, time and chance happen to them all. What's he saying? Time and chance. So much of our life is not under our control. We don't control our lives and the things that happen to us. Time and chance. Here's the first thing I show you. Do you remember the email from my friend in the Skeptic Society? And you look at that and say, wow, 10% of life is really luck outside our control. No. Let's go back. When I have lunch with him in a couple of weeks' time, I'm going to take this and we'll talk about it. But you see, what's he say? 30% genes. In other words, excuse me, a DNA that you were dealt. Well, wait a minute. Excuse me. I'm going to have to cough, so I'm going to turn this off. Oh, got to give up those cigarettes. No, I don't smoke. 30, your genes, right. Okay, 10% luck. No, 30% your genes. Well, you didn't choose that. It's completely outside your control. It just, you get it or you don't, right? It's whatever your parents had, and then bang, there you are. Okay. quality of your parenting, of the parents that you had, and education. You didn't choose your parents. You didn't choose your education. That's complete, well, luck. And so all of a sudden, 30%, 30%, we're at 70% luck without even pushing it. And I think it's a whole lot more. And that's 70% of my friend's worldview that's just completely outside of your control. Here's a very interesting book. Malcolm Gladwell is a great writer. I've read quite a few of his books. This is his best, I think, Outliers. And what it's about is the kind of super high performers in all different fields of endeavor. So sport, music, computing, becoming rich, basically, etc. And he looks at what is it about the super high performers. Now, it's not just hard work that you might think. The number 10,000 keeps coming up. So if you want to be world's best at anything, whether that's, you know, computer coding, music, being a rock band, whatever, sport, whatever it is, you need 10,000 hours of practice. And that number just kept coming up in all sorts of different fields. But it's more than just hard work. He says this, particularly looking at the professional sport in Canada. He shows the example of ice hockey in Canada, but it applies to so many other sports. If you want to be a professional athlete, it's very good to be born in January or February. And that gives you way huge advantage. Totally random for the person who wants. Why? They start selection for elite sports as early as 8 years old, and they're looking for people, men or mainly, this one example is boys, they're looking for boys who are particularly gifted in ice hockey. Now, if you're 8 years old and you're born in January, or you're 8 years old and you're born in September, the January boy has almost a year of growth ahead of his September colleague. And then you get selected into a representative team because you're born in January, and you get all the special coaching, and the way opens up for you, etc. So it's all about when, what month you were born in, right? In so much of professional sport is showing. Or they're getting to the top in the business world. Bill Gates, very clever man, done his 10,000 hours of computing, etc. But Malcolm Gladwell shows 9 different things that lined up out of Bill Gates' control, but lined up. So he just happened to go to a school that had early computing in the 70s. And then he got to do a holiday job all about computing. And he lived near Washington University and could walk there. And 9 different things. Now, it's not a cheap shot at Bill Gates. Gates himself says how lucky all of those things were and, you know, the world's richest person. Or he lists the 75 richest people in history. Now, I don't know who with a propeller hat worked that out, but across hundreds of nations, thousands of years, who are the 75 richest people in history? And he says, here's this, an amazing thing. 20% of them were born in a 9-year period in one particular country. Mid-1800s, USA, when the economy and the nation just went geometric in terms of growth. Names like Rockefeller, Carnegie, JP Morgan, etc. It's just luck. Hard work, yes. But there's so much luck involved in the whole thing. Brilliant book. Australian patron saint of luck. There he is. Right, yeah, Stephen Bradbury. Now, here's what's interesting. Stephen Bradbury was at the 1994 Olympics, 1994 Summer Olympics, winter. The 1994 Winter Olympics, the 1998 Winter Olympics, and this is the 2002 Winter Olympics. You've never heard of him in the 90s. Why have we heard of Stephen Bradbury, 2002 Olympics? Because the 7 other guys in the race all fell over and he sailed through. What I like about it, if you've watched it on YouTube, is him skating around, not saying, hey, how great am I, but saying, hey, how good is this, right? Anyway, I just love it. And of course, the way that luck is handed out, it's as people deserve it, of course. So this man, Michael Wearsley, this is March this year. He lives in the USA. He was newly divorced, unemployed, and living with his mother in New Jersey. Waking up one morning, Michael Wearsley was also lamenting the loss of 2 lottery tickets. He'd bought in a bagel, 2 lottery tickets he'd bought in a bagel shop the previous evening. He was fairly sure he'd left them in the shop. I was like, well, it's just another thing I lost, he said. However, a woman behind the till told him that someone had picked up the tickets and handed them in, and after answering a few basic questions, she gave them back to Mr. Wearsley. The draw took place that night. 2 days later, he discovered he had won $273 million US in the Mega Millions jackpot. There's Mr. Weasley. And what a great human being he is. Of course, we're told his wife, who divorced him, would not go anywhere near him, even for $270 million. She said this, "He's not appealing to me at all. He's not appealing to me all of a sudden because he has this money," she said in the article. They'd been married for 15 years of their marriage. She had worked all the time, and he had described himself as a homemaker, although they had no children. But he's the guy that won the $273 million US. And the story of Peter, Chinese restaurant, just the two of us. He rings the band and says, I'm dropping out. I'm going to go to law school. Eating away the yum cha. I said, "Mate, you got to tell me the name of the band." And he's looked up at me, our eyes met, and he said, "AC/DC." If you don't know who Akadaka is, Bruce Ryle educates you later on. They're just arguably, greatest rock band in the history of the world, except for Bruce Springsteen. Yeah, okay. AC/DC, two of the world. Let's just go back. Okay, that's just one of their, one of their concerts. One of their albums sold 200 million copies, I think. Here we go. Angus Young is now one of the founding members of the group. Angus Young is now worth $140 million. So I looked at Peter across the table, and he told the story. And I said, mate, all that money, all that fame, all those women, wouldn't have been any good for you. He said, I know. But you know what? I did the stats. I went and did the research. The man who became the drummer in 1975 instead of Peter, his name is Phil Rudd. And since then, I tell you what, no one would want to swap lives with him. He's had a deeply troubled life, drugs and problems with police and law and all sorts of things. And you know what? My friend was actually very lucky to have made that phone call. He dodged a bullet, really. Have you ever thought about your own life and how many just random chance little incidents actually affect the whole direction of your life? If you think back through, I've been doing a little bit of this week, in my own humble little life. I mean, the reason I was born, so my dad worked at the Commercial Banking Company of Sydney, CBC Bank in Grafton, a little town, and my mum happened to do the banking for her work in that bank. And they both played tennis. And if Mum had gone to a different bank, it wouldn't be me speaking to you tonight. Or I grew up in Grafton, a little town up north. Why? Because my dad broke his ankle. There you go, I can fill in the gaps. But if Dad hadn't broken his ankle, would have grown up in the Sutherland Shire. I was all signed up to come to Macquarie University after school. I had to come down here. One random conversation with my athletics coach. He said, there's a course at Uni New South Wales, it's pretty good. That's where I end up. I go to New College, there's more than 200 rooms. And I end up in the room beside another young guy called Bryson Smith. Changed my life. And the random events that will change our lives, usually we cannot see them at the time, we don't realise it, and we see them in hindsight. But we can't control that, can we? So anxiety, if we live under the sun, a feeling of worry or nervousness or unease about something with an uncertain outcome. But you know what? The random events aren't always good, are they? See verse 12. "Moreover, no one knows when their hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net or birds are taken in a snare, so people are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them." Rod and Mary Burrows, they went on holidays in March 2014. They booked a flight on Malaysian Airlines, MH370. The flight that disappeared into oblivion. But that was just luck, really, wasn't it? Last year, there were 1,141 people killed on Australian roads, 1,141. If you don't know them, they're just random statistics. If you do know them, it's a tragedy, isn't it? Is it any wonder that if, as our society more and more lives under the sun, that anxiety's on the rise? If you go to the Beyond Blue website about depression, etc., and anxiety, for example, the stats that they've got there on the website, 1 in 7 Australians is currently experiencing an anxiety condition. That's 1 in 7, an anxiety condition. That's 2.71 million people. Or 1/4 of Australians will experience an anxiety condition in their lifetime. That's 4.96 million people. 1 in 6 visits to a general practitioner is anxiety related. And folks, here's the great irony. The more that we conquer the physical problems of life, the more and more despair becomes a problem. Now, I'm going to talk to you about a forbidden topic, but I think it's worth kind of dragging it out. I'll use some stats from Yuval Noah Harari's books. He is a lecturer in history at Jerusalem University. He is a very clever man and a very good writer. Much cleverer than I am. Not quite as clever as he thinks he is, and Sapiens particularly is a brilliant book. I disagree with almost everything he says, but it's brilliantly written. You can read it, it'll make you think. He's actually, ironically, I think he is actually operating under the sun as a worldview, more or less. But here's what he says. It's about, I think, as we conquer more and more of the physical problems of life, we develop more and more despair. He quotes 2002 World Health Organization, the United Nations organization, and they're trying to work out how many people die at the hands of others on planet Earth. So that year they estimated 172,000 people died in war, 569,000 died around the planet because of violent crime. Gives a total of 741,000 people who died because of human violence. Here's the troubling stat. 873,000 people committed suicide. The most likely person to kill you on planet Earth is yourself. He says, it is an ominous sign that despite higher prosperity, comfort and security, the rate of suicide in the developed world is also much higher than in traditional societies. What's he mean? Well, he quotes, in societies that he says are struggling with political instability and poverty, Peru, Haiti, Philippines, Ghana, the suicide rate is about 5 people in each 100,000 per annum. 5 people per 100,000. In developed countries where the standard of living is much higher, Switzerland, France, Japan, New Zealand, the suicide rate is double, 10 per 100,000. And Australia's right up there as well, with 10 per 100,000 per year. Suicide is the leading cause of death in Australia for people between 15 and 44 years of age. There are more young Australians killed by suicide than in motor vehicle accidents. In 2017, 75% of the people who died by a suicide were male, 25% female. That is, in 2017, 2,348 men took their own life, and approximately 1/3 that number, women. Now, folks, I'm not drawing lines for any individual. Every individual has a different story and different reasons and so on. My point is to say, once you have a worldview that operates simply under the sun, it inevitably leads to despair, is my argument. Now, second worldview is totally different. And that is what? That we don't live just under the sun. That God has spoken to us. God spoke to us in the Bible, in the Old Testament. He would speak to us through the prophets of Israel who brought the word of God. They tell us that God is personal, that God knows us, that God cares about us. Listen to Psalm 139 as King David writes this. He says this, Psalm 139, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. He says a little later, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. We're not random. It's not just DNA at random. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. You saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. It's not just random. It's God holds our lives in his hands. Now, why do I believe that? Well, fundamentally, foundationally, because of what you might call the Christ event. The birth, life, teaching, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's why. And what do we tell that God has especially spoken to us in Jesus? The Word became one of us and lived with us. And what does Jesus say to those who follow him in terms of anxiety and in terms of who actually has control of our lives? Well, Matthew chapter 10, verse 29, Jesus says, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside your Father's care. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Now notice he doesn't say the sparrows won't fall to the ground, and he doesn't say the hairs won't fall out of your head. Okay? What he does say is you're valuable. God's got you. All right? He's holding. It's okay. And planet Earth, your life, planet Earth is in God's hands. Now the Bible, I don't want to be simplistic, I haven't got time really to develop this, but the Bible talks about there's an interplay between a sovereign God. The Bible's way of talking about God as king, God in control of everything, yeah, that's absolutely true, and at the same time, human beings are real moral agents with real decisions, with real consequences. And the Bible holds those two truths, both true at the same time, all the way through, from cover to cover. That's the way to understand the world. God's in charge. He holds it all in his hands. We have real decisions with real consequences. But do you know, once you actually begin to follow Jesus, you can look back and see the hand of God in your life. Right? You can see that. You can see it happening. So in my own humble little life, I'm born to a wonderful Christian mum who, from my earliest memories, began to teach me about God. The random conversation with my athletics coach that points me to the University of New South Wales gets me there. I get into New College. There's 220 rooms. I happen to get the room beside Bryson Smith, the young guy who's a switched-on Christian who showed me what it meant to live and got me to listen to the Bible. I'm invited to hear a once-in-a-generation Bible teacher week by week. It's not random as I look back. You see the hand of God in so many things. I mean, I'm studying marketing. I've got to do an essay on the soap industry, the world's most boring topic. I go to the state library, and of course, there's someone there ahead of me with all of the books out, and she's sitting at a table, and she's here tonight. She could always write a great essay. Random? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And so what does God promise? That he belong to Jesus, that he will guide you, teach you, that he may not give you everything you want. What he promises is he'll give you everything and use everything for your good. Now, what's our good ultimately? In Romans chapter 8, the Apostle Paul talks about God being in control of our lives and what is ultimately good for those of us who do follow him. Let me show you. Romans 8, verse 28, the Apostle Paul says this, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. So he's saying everything that happens, if you belong to Jesus, everything that happens to you, God will ultimately use it for your good, right? For those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose, for those God knew you in advance, right? Foreknew, he also predestined, chose you, and what's the good? To be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. What's he saying? God will use everything that happens to you in life to actually make you, conform you, make you like Jesus. Okay, make you become like Jesus. Now, unfortunately, the easy things in life aren't what mold us and change us. Often it needs to be hard things, difficult lessons that we have to learn, but that's the promise. Now, let me quickly pull a few threads together. If you're a Christian, can you still be anxious? Well, the answer is yeah, sure. Lots of Christian people are still anxious. Why? I'll tell you why I'm anxious sometimes. I know God's in charge. I believe that. I know everything that happens is in God's hands. Why am I anxious? Well, because he mightn't do it my way. What if he doesn't do it my way? Because obviously this 1.2 kilos of porridge between my ears knows how the world should be run, and I, you know, why not do it? He should do it my way. And as Kathy says, relax, the job of Jesus is already taken. Okay, got to learn that. Anxiety, look, if you're a worrier, you're also worrying about, remember, you're worrying about the future, don't add guilt to anxiety. Just, here's what I think the answer. It's interesting how gentle Jesus is. Jesus tears strips off people about certain things, right? But in terms of his people, those who follow him, and anxiety, he's very gentle. And he really is saying, look, God clothes the grass of the field. God feeds the birds of the air. God will look after you. What is it you're worried about? In Luke 12, he says, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. And I think I can say that the more that you can internalize, the more that you can understand that truth and make it part of how you see the world, the less anxiety you'll live with. Okay? So don't feel guilty about it. Make that your worldview more and more and try and understand it. And at the moment, your life might feel chaotic, and you look at history and what's happening in the world, it looks chaotic. A while ago, Toby used the example of the flip side of a tapestry. Now, that's just a mess of threads here and there, etc., and you can't see what it is. And then you turn it over and you can see one day you'll see it's a tapestry. And every thread mattered, and it all came together to form a picture. And sometimes in our own life, or as we look at the world, all you can see is the chaos. And what have you got to do then? I think hold tight to what Jesus promised. Hold on to the resurrection and his promise of his return. And wait. Hang on to him. Okay, there's the two world views. One, you live under the sun, if that's all we can see. You die regardless of how you live. Time and chance dominate, and anxiety and despair so easily take control. Or to believe that God has spoken to us, that as you follow the person of Jesus and trust him, God holds us in his hands. It's all right. There's nothing to be anxious about. He's got us. You pray with me? Please, God, we ask that we might all learn to trust the Lord Jesus, to understand that he holds our lives in his hands. And so we can live lives of confidence and joy that point to him. Ask, please, that we might come to know this and be able to live lives that are not so anxious. And we ask this in his name. Amen.